Let's dig back into this discussion about democracy and whether it's dying. Ancient philosophers predicted serious flaws in the democratic model of government. And even today, there are still questions about whether our democracy can survive. With me now to talk about the state of American democracy is Michael Evans of Georgia State University. He teaches political science. Wouldn't that be an improvement?
I think sometimes my students wish it was political silence, but no.
When you hear a lot of debates in Congress, sometimes I think that too. And also with us is political science professor Robert Pirro of Georgia Southern University. Thanks for joining us, Robert.
Thank you.
Okay, so part of the impetus for this conversation has been the discussion among some thinkers around the country into what it means, this nominating process for president that we're seeing. I want to play a comment from Andrew Sullivan. He's a conservative. He wrote a New York Magazine story called America Has Never Been So Ripe for Tyranny. And he lays out the case that we have too much democracy, and that's what's killing democracy. Here he is speaking with Slate Magazine's Trump Cast podcast.
The idea of sharing power or being checked by other branches of government or even checked by the press seems anathema to him. And I think when you have someone with that kind of temperament walking into our constitutional system, you are kind of setting yourself up for a constitutional crisis.
What do you make of the constitutional crisis that he says we're in? Do you think that's accurate?
Well, for the question of whether our democracy is about to die and whether whether Trump presents a real threat of a tyrant like Plato had in mind, I think is very far fetched. I think that for you have to think through what would it take for any candidate, for any president to present a true threat of an authoritarian takeover of our government. And here you have to look at the institutional framework, the fact that we have the separation of powers, the fact that we have civilian control of the military and a military that is indoctrinated into a strong respect for the rule of law and democracy and for the Constitution. I think that someone who has authoritarian tendencies and who embraces political violence the way that Donald Trump does, I think that they can be very damaging. I think that they are antithetical to a lot of our highest democratic ideals. But I don't think that they present a threat to the continuance of our democracy.
Yeah, that's a little different than a constitutional crisis. Robert, let me play you this comment from Fox News host Bill O'Reilly. He was speaking on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, and he's talking about both Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders here.
Trump and Sanders are the same guy because they're both tapping into anger, the anger of the voter who feels they're getting hosed. The good part about it is it gets people engaged in a political process. Uh-huh. So that's good. What's bad is both Trump and Sanders say stuff that's impossible. That could never happen. And their followers, I guess, don't really care.
When was the last time the world saw a democracy usurped by tyranny, Robert? Was it Germany? When was it?
Well, Germany is probably the most prominent example that one can think of in the recent past. But I'd like to go back to that comment by O'Reilly. And I think it's important to make a distinction between Trump and Sanders. I mean, when you think about the threats to democracy, there are at least two that come to mind immediately, and that's factionalism. And what I mean by that is that when groups in society are unwilling to tolerate sharing power with others. And I think that Trump really is a kind of standard bearer for that threat, that he and I think some of his followers anyway are intolerant sort of limits. And so that's the threat he poses. Now, with Sanders, I think he's actually putting his finger on the other red flag, I think, the other threat to democracy, which is corruption, which is public officials using their power for private gain. And I think that Sanders is not—he's not a corrupt person, but he's putting his—he's sort of putting his finger on that threat to democracy. So I see it. I would say that in this election cycle, we see two red flags out there for the threats to democracy. One is factionalism, which Trump, I think, he exemplifies, and the other one is corruption, which Bernie Sanders is doing his best to sort of put a spotlight on.
Mike, those are factionalism and corruption, especially when it's tied to money, are two things that Plato pointed out as red flags to the death of democracy. And we just heard Charlotte explain that we do not live in a pure democratic system. Right. We certainly have touches.
Absolutely.
We're a capitalist democracy, but we have touches of socialism and all kind of other isms. But Do you still accept those kind of things as red flags, even in our modern American democracy?
Yeah, for having a healthy democracy that you know that's functional and lives up to for us to live up to our full potential as a constitutional democracy that respects human rights and the rule of law, absolutely corruption and factionalism are a problem. I think you know I would say that our partisan polarization that we have today is an example of the problem of factionalism as well as...
Yeah. It's funny you say that, because let me play this comment from Paul Ryan. He's a Republican Speaker of the House, and he says he doesn't think democracy works with a two-party system in the executive and legislative branch. Here he is speaking with Fox News host Megyn Kelly.
We're going to offer specific plans. We're going to say, here is what we could do with a Republican president in 2017.
To try to get the
voters
motivated.
If you elect us, this is what we'll do. Because the key is we have to have the people break this tie. We have this divided government, liberal president, conservative Congress. It's not working.
So you don't think anything could get done unless it's one-party rule?
Look at the path we are on.
So how do you put that into context, Robert?
Well, I think I would go back to the comment that Dr. Evans just made, and that is this partisan sort of polarization. But I think really historically, if you look at it, what's happened is that and I think that there's plenty of evidence of this, that the Republican Party's moved more to the right, and the Democrats have moved more to the center as they've been pulled in that direction. And once again, I think that the idea that the only way we can get things done is by having unitary party rule, I mean, that makes me a little uncomfortable. I think that, you know, in the past we've had presidents from one party and Congresses controlled by the other, and there's been cooperation. And what's happened today is that, you know, for many people, that's no longer a possibility. And that's definitely worrisome for people who believe in democracy.
Now, Mike, is it possible that if our democracy is weak or threatened at this point, is it possible that's because of apathy? I mean, among the developed nation, I think we have almost the lowest amount of voter participation of any developed world. Is it because people simply aren't participating?
Lack of participation. It's not all due to apathy. A lot of it has to do with our registration laws and the rules governing the game that make it harder to vote in this country than in other countries. So I don't equate low turnout with apathy necessarily. Although there is a lot of that, there's also widespread ignorance by citizens, and we don't want to say that, but it's true. The opinion polls, 50 years of political science research have borne it out. There is a disturbingly high level of ignorance and disengagement. So I think, you know, we definitely, anytime you're talking about the prospects for democracy, you must look at civic education, and it's probably our
most schools don't have civics anymore.
One of the most worrisome developments. I think that we need to reinvigorate our civic education in this country. Absolutely.
All right. My guests are Michael Evans of Georgia State University and Robert Pirro of Georgia Southern University, both to teach political science. So let me bring you another comment from conservative commentator Andrew Sullivan. He wrote the piece in New York Magazine called America Has Never Been So Ripe for Tyranny. He says that Trump's candidacy is not the only reason he's worried about a shift away from democracy. Here he is again speaking with Slate Magazine's TrumpCast podcast.
I think there's also an element in the culture in which Washington is viewed as entirely broken, and therefore they want to blow it up and use this guy to blow it up and then to do whatever he wants. And so I think that at the root of this is a very un-American desire to abolish self-government.
Robert, un-American desire, and I feel like this kind of gets back to what Mike was just talking about, because it's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy that the more government doesn't work, the less likely people are to feel motivated to vote, which makes government work less efficiently, right?
Well, I think the Bernie Sanders campaign, he's tried to, I think, spotlight this, is that when people don't feel as though they have a stake in the system, when they feel as though, and this is from the campaign, when the system economically and politically is rigged against them, that's where you get the frustration. And so Sanders argues that a lot of the Trump voters, it's not as though they want to overthrow democracy, but they're frustrated. They're working longer for less pay and so on and so forth. And so they're frustrated by the fact that they don't feel they have a stake and that the system is not working for them. And so that they're willing to, you know, they're willing to listen to somebody who promises, you know, huge walls on the border and closing off immigration from Muslims, you know, just crazy, crazy ideas. But because they're so frustrated with the system, that appeals to them.
All right. Let me play you another clip. And again, we're talking about whether or not democracy is doomed from the start to fail, as Plato suggested. And we're talking about political divisiveness. So that makes this next bit of tape kind of relevant. Last week, Congress erupted. There was an amendment that would have given protection for members of the LGBT community. That amendment failed. The Hill newspaper said that it was supposed to pass. They thought it would pass. But Republican leaders urged their members to change their votes. And if you'll hear here, the lawmakers begin chanting, "Shame." So, Michael, is this kind of divisiveness in Congress a good sign? I mean, maybe this shows that people are passionate, or is this one of the red flags that Plato told us to watch for?
I think sometimes we need to distinguish between our crisis of governance and the crisis of our democracy. You know, in some ways, democracy is about passion and about standing up for beliefs and standing up for our ideological commitments. And so in some ways, as Andrew Sullivan says, this is a sign of a lot of democracy in our system. But that doesn't necessarily make for workable government, particularly with our institutions. Our institutions we have the separation of powers. We have a bicameral legislature. We have a system of fragmented institutions that were designed to force deliberation and compromise and bargaining in order to enact laws. And when you have polarized political parties with very homogeneous ideological commitments, it makes it very difficult for us to govern. And this does also, I think, creates conditions when people. I think we see disaffection with our system of government, particularly by young Americans at a higher level than older Americans. And I think they've grown up during this economic crisis and they've seen a government that's unable, incapable of taking action. And that's a disturbing sign that they will believe that this kind of inability for our parties to come together and compromise in the way that we need them to is a sign with a problem with democracy. And that would make me worry.
Okay. So then, Robert, look, I know that people often immediately jump to the Hitler comparisons. And to a certain extent, I feel like that's understandable, because obviously people would be afraid of that. The world watched a democracy fall into fascism, and it's in some way healthy to be afraid of that and want that not to happen again. But what do you make of Andrew Sullivan's core theory that at this point there are so many cracks in the wall that we could be in danger of the rise of a tyrant?
Well, I have a close friend who's a retired lieutenant colonel in the Air Force, and he's been very concerned by the fact that at one of the debates, Trump said that were he commander in chief and he were to order the military to do something that was unconstitutional, he would expect them to follow his order. I think he later walked that back, but I can understand why Trump, for many people, is a frightening Trump presidency is a frightening prospect. But I have a little more. Maybe I'm a little more optimistic. I mean, Dr. Evans was talking about the possibility that young people might be turned off to politics, might see all this anger as a problem with democracy rather than governance. But once again, if you look at this last campaign and you look at the Bernie Sanders campaign and the young people that he's brought out, people who want to be engaged, who have a positive agenda, I think that there are signs of renewal possibly there as well.
And yet, speaking on the Democrat side, Michael, there many young people are disenchanted by the Democratic process, that they feel Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, contest is not being played out fairly. So is there another bit of a yellow warning sign there?
I suspect they're going to come around. I think they feel like the Democratic Party's nomination process, they feel,
is unfair.
I think that, after June after the last primary, June 6th, is it? Sanders is probably going to realize that he needs to bring the party together, and I think he'll get his supporters regardless of what they think about the process. I think he'll bring them on board to be supportive of democracy in the general election. So I'm not too worried about that over the long term.
Okay, so in the 30 seconds that we have left, Michael Evans of Georgia State University, the state of our democracy is?
Sick, but not on its deathbed.
Robert Pirro of Georgia Southern, the state of our democracy is?
It's under pressure, as democracies are time and again, but I think it has the resources to overcome this.
Okay. I guess that's a little bit of cautious optimism from our two political scientists. Michael Evans teaches at Georgia State University. Robert Pirro teaches at Georgia Southern. They both teach political science. Michael and Robert, thank you both so much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be on.
That's our show for today, but we would love to get your voices on this as well. What do you think of the state of our democracy and the democratic process here in the U.S.? Are you worried? Are you afraid? And what are you afraid of? Call us at 404-500-9457. You can also read us on the Twitter at OST Talk or post to Facebook. For today, that is On Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Celeste Headley. Have a great day.